If you don't feel empowered, you cannot challenge. If you don't challenge, you cannot learn. If you cannot learn, then you cannot contribute. And if you cannot contribute, then you don't feel safe. Without psychological safety, inefficiency is really, really high.
This is the Delivery Space podcast. Whether you're interested in software delivery, business change, or transformation, we have some great content lined up for you. We launch into different areas of project delivery and bring you insights and experiences that you won't get from a book. Welcome, I'm Nisha, and this is our episode on tips to achieve psychological safety within teams. Today, I'm joined by a great guest, Pamela Ayodele. Hello, Pamela.
Hi, Nisha. How are you?
Good, thank you. And how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Happy to be on your show today. I've heard great things about this and I'm really happy to be part of it.
Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a bit about you?
My name is Pamela Ayodele and I am an Agile coach. Oh, Agile coaching is a passion for me because I love to see transformation happen. I love to see people move from one way of working to another. Being an Agile coach was almost an accidental happiness that happened to me. I was a traditional project manager, and we know what it's like in terms of having to deal with waterfall methodologies, which is not in itself bad, but I started questioning delivery methods and what is the business value. So my quest for business value made me begin to look into other ways of working, and that led me down the path of Agile. I've been in the Agile space for over 5 years now, and I was a project manager amongst many other things for over 20 years.
We welcome you onto the show, Pamela, and hope to gain a lot from your experiences. And you described yourself as definitely a people person. I get the sense of that from you, as I've known you too over the years. What part does psychological safety play in your role as an Agile coach?
I don't know if we have heard of a woman called Amy Edmondson. She is the modern mother of psychological safety. If you're going to talk about psychological safety, I think it would be a travesty not to mention her name and give her credit where credit is due. So psychological safety, in her definition, and which I truly believe is the actual meaning of psychological safety, is the belief that no one will be punished or humiliated for speaking up with ideas, questions, concerns, or mistakes that have been made in their team. And the team also is safe for interpersonal risk taking. Now, she has mentioned quite a few things there in terms of you as a person and how you interpret psychological safety. So now to your question, Nisha, you asked how I apply that to my role. You have to learn that psychological safety is something that is almost like a fundamental human right within your team, because if you're not safe within your team, then where would you be safe in a work environment? How I deal with it is you have to make sure that your team members are safe to learn. If you're not learning, they say you're dying. How I apply that within my team is ensure that my team is able to learn, is able to learn new skills, is able to be included in learning new skills. We talk about cross-functionality within organizations and within our teams. We talk about T-shaping. We talk about all these wonderful acronyms that we bring and introduce to our teams. But how is that going to happen if your team is not able to learn? Another thing I do is I need to make sure that my team is safe to contribute. Everyone has an equal voice. Most importantly, not only does anyone have an equal voice, not everyone is compelled to contribute if they don't feel comfortable to. Because one thing I have come to realize within teams and dynamics is that not everybody is a talker. Mm-hmm. Everyone has different personality types, and that actually directly affects the way we relate to our work, to people, and to the organization in general. And how, most importantly, how we receive feedback. You know, that's really important as well. So when people are safe to learn, you have to create a space where they can actually learn and learn in a way where they would not be compromised in terms of their intellectual capacity and their ability to be able to be part of the team.
You mentioned learning, and that's one of those areas where, you know, it's a good marker of whether a team setting is psychologically safe or not. With learning comes mistakes, comes the ability to experiment, comes the ability to actually say openly, without fear of reprimand or judgment, this is an area I'm not completely familiar with. I need to find out more about this area. This is an area I need to look into. And that's happening within our teams, especially within software delivery, over and over again. We're running experiments. We're trying to figure out what the best way forward is for solving problems. The one thing that you mentioned that definitely stuck out for me is the fact that you create an environment of learning first and foremost within those teams. How do you go about doing that? How do you go about creating that feeling of connection and safety, which sometimes is, you can see it, you definitely recognize it, is a missing ingredient in that bedrock of team communication?
Sometimes we underestimate the power of learning. And in order for us to be able to look at it from a broader perspective, we also have to understand culture. Every team has a culture. And now I'm not talking about ethnicity now, which, you know, culture and ethnicity and all that have a large part to play in the way we learn as well, you know, but we're talking about now, I'm talking simply about the team. Every team has a culture. What kind of culture are you creating within that team? So the type of culture you create within your team will directly correlate to the way the team is able to learn. So as an agile coach, if there's a culture of mistrust, distrust, and a culture of just general chaos and delivery pressure, that is not a culture where people are able to learn. You're not thriving within that environment. So therefore, you're not able to learn. You're mainly delivery focused. Being delivery focused is not necessarily a negative thing, but how is that impacting on your ability to learn? Because if you're not upskilling and you're not learning from one another, especially, then it creates the inability for you to be able to deliver in an effective way. Learning directly affects the quality of code. Built-in quality. How do you build in quality into your team if you're actually not learning new ways of doing that exactly, or just learning simple things like how to communicate as a team? So learning is way more than just being technical. You know, I've never really had technical issues in terms of people are employed because of their technical skills. That's valid. Check. That's one of the biggest things there. You know, a job advert goes out, you find like lots of technical skills and everything. So that's not a problem. But now, how do you begin to apply that technicality in a wider context, in a team context? Because you've got different cultures, different learning habits, different abilities to be able to receive feedback, different dynamics within the team. How do you begin to inculcate that? What do I do? You ask your team.
So you adopt a dialogue, questions with the team to ascertain how comfortable they are with this, with learning, their approach to learning. What other techniques can you share with us that you used with teams to make it a comfortable environment for them to learn in?
There is the business canvas. So I basically modified that. And there are two things I use a lot in my team. Empathy maps, because sometimes we take for granted power of emotions. And if you're in a highly emotive state, your capability to be able to learn is highly diminished because for whatever reason, you're just not within the right frame of mind. So one of the exercises I find very, very helpful within the team is to do an empathy map whereby you put somebody else in your shoes, because you've got people that are really on the ball, that have the ability to be able to assimilate information like an AI machine. And you have other people that are equally as intelligent, but probably slower, take their time. And you've got the people that are perfectionists. So you have to be able to empathize with one another in order for them to be able to see things from another person's perspective, then introduce new learnings. That's one, you know. And secondly, I just have a very good old chat. This happens a lot informally. So to be able to introduce new learnings in my team, usually we would just have very informal chats about, okay, what is the best way? What is the best way you like to learn? And they have all sorts of wonderful ideas. I think sometimes we underestimate the power of the team, the minds that we have within our team. They will tell you if you ask them. But the problem is nobody asks. And we just come up with all these different learning methods, different learning ideas that they probably would not benefit much from, because it's not what they want, it's what you want, or what the organization is projecting on them as a compulsory way of learning a particular skill or topic or something. So there are many learning tips out there and how to engage your team with learning. They're all adults. The reason why they're employed is because, one, they're all over above 18, and secondly, they're actually responsible people that have been paid to do a particular role. So why micromanage them? That's the one thing that I don't understand. Why micromanage them? They come up with great and wonderful ideas.
Yeah, you just need to create that safe space where they can say, you know what? It's easy for me to be able to take a risk. Nobody on this team is going to reprimand me or judge me for any of my efforts in experimentation or figuring out problems. I can speak it out openly. And I think if I think about teams that I've joined, even as an agile coach, so that, you know, I can help improve their performance, it's been, as you say, like a great team of individuals, software engineers that know their craft, right? But there have been delivery pressures that have pushed them in a certain direction. And then they're in a space where they need to create that environment that is safe to learn, safe to experiment. They've got a breather and they want to be able to function as a high performing team, but they want to be able to get better at what they do continuously. And that's where that space for learning, that space for improvement, and that safety comes in to say, okay, leadership, we know that you have these demands. We know that you have a roadmap. We know that you've got these goals to try to achieve so you can reach your business outcomes that you're trying to go for. However, in order to get there, there's certain hurdles that we need to get through in terms of our own learning. And that should be a free-flowing dialogue, I think, between teams and leadership as well.
Yes, it has to be. Another thing where we sort of like lack as organizations generally is that we don't build it into roadmap for the team. Because learning takes time.
No.
Time and effort. You have to be able to include that as part of the learning within the organization, whereby the team can actually learn. So having delivery pressures and learning are not mutually exclusive, because you can actively deliver, be a high performing team, act in your function. At the same time, you're learning new skills. And to be very honest, learning doesn't necessarily have to be formalized. You learn from one another. It could be simple things, easy ways of improving your agility. Simple things like timekeeping. Some people are really terrible at timekeeping, you know. So just different skills that you can learn that does not necessarily have to cost the organization money, but would cost them time in terms of skilling up their people to be able to learn in your team. Yeah, there's something I call creative cohabitation, whereby you can basically learn and deliver at the same time, simultaneously. And you've just pointed out something really important there in terms of capacity planning. A lot of times we're planning to 110% capacity, and it's impossible for anyone to actually continuously deliver at 110%. And we're not making out time for the team to actually say, look, down tools today, we need to learn something. We need to learn. You know, so as you rightly said, planning it in our capacity, which is one of the things I really advocate for when I join a new team, or when I have to coach a team or a group of teams, when they get to sprint planning and all that. And I always coach them to include learnings, because it's one thing to have the retrospective. And I think this is where sometimes we get it wrong, where we think retrospectives are to learn. Our retrospectives are not to learn, because some teams, between 60 and 90 minutes, and you're looking at qualitative, quantitative analysis of your sprint, what time is there to learn a new skill within that time frame when you are actually looking at the sprint and you're going into the next sprint planning?
Yeah, not a lot.
So time is one thing we don't really factor into a lot of things. Things don't happen in space. There's a time limit. Like change, we want things to happen immediately, but we have to consider the fact that teams need time to be able to embed new practices, which is where psychological safety also comes into place. Because if your team is not psychologically safe, you can't expect them to embed new practices in a space of 1 week of learning that new practice. It takes time. And with time, you need them to experiment. You need them to be able to contribute. You need them to be able to actually challenge as well, because that is a good tipping point for a team that is psychologically safe. If you're in a team and they're not able to challenge, then there's a problem. It's either they are they're not speaking up for fear of being reprimanded, or historically it has happened and everybody is just tired of saying the same thing over and over again and people just keep quiet after that. Team morale is really, really low. People are just not wanting to turn up to work. And even when they turn up to work, they're not turning up with 100% of themselves. So how are you being your authentic self at work if you're not psychologically safe within your team? And it's one of our roles as agile coaches to be able to look at that, analyze the team dynamics, look at what is happening within your team, and look at how you can actually help, encourage, improve psychological safety within your team, and how you can work with the Scrum Master as well, which is really important because they are the ones that are really interfacing with the team. Help them, equip them with knowledge to be able to sometimes, because you get caught up with the whole Scrum cycle sometimes. If you're using Scrum, you know, you get caught up with this never-ending Scrum cycle that you don't take time to breathe and actually look at the wider implications it's having on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also the Scrum Master who's getting familiar, who is familiar with the personalities within the teams as well. And the thing that you've just said about authentic communication, Pamela, within that is also the safe space for that conversation and the ability for team members within that safe space to say, actually, no, I'm not up for discussing a particular thing. If they're not up for discussing something, or if they don't feel they're in the right headspace for it, they should be able, in my view, be free enough to say, actually, I'm not ready to discuss something. So they don't go there prematurely, so that you get the best from them, their best ideas when they're ready, because we don't know what's going on for each other, right? And we're finding ourselves in a virtual world right now. We're on Zoom, Teams, whatever you have. We're in our virtual environments. We're connecting with each other to get the job done in a lot of scenarios. But then once we're off screen, we don't really know what's going on for each other in our lives, truly. So I think part of that psychological safety is allowing team members the space to think things through before they come with their ideas too.
This is where the personality and cultural context comes into place. You know, different cultures have different responses, you know, to different situations in, you know, happening either in their personal lives or in their work lives. We have cultures where they believe that women should not speak up. They have cultures where, you know, there's really a lot of hierarchy within, you know, the culture. So there are different cultures and different reasons as to why people's behaviors are the way they are. If you look into psychology, they basically classify human behavior and human responses. There are so many different classes. And also, that is why there are different personality types. You know, so one of the things I am looking to introduce into my team, interestingly enough, is personality tests. And this is not really to pry into people's private lives, but it helps me as an agile coach to be able to understand a person's personality, understand how it affects the team dynamics, and understand collective personalities within the team. When you're having, especially when you have one-on-one coaching with them, you can understand the way they think, the way they behave, why they are responding to certain things, the way they respond to certain situations. You know, and I think before we had this conversation about personality types and response to situations within teams. Some are really, really introverted and would not say a word, but that doesn't make them any less intelligent than the more extroverted people. So how do you engage with the introvert in your team as opposed to the extrovert who is ready to speak from the beginning of the meeting to the end of the meeting? How do you manage those dynamics? Because they both have valid points. One uses a lot of words, the other person is quite introspective, and all they need to do is probably say a couple of sentences and like, yeah, penny drops. So how do you begin to manage those kind of dynamics? And that is where understanding personality types come into place, where you're able to understand why that person responds the way they respond to the team. You know, why they seem not to contribute, but it's not that they're not contributing. It's just that is not their preferred communication method. Everyone can engage and come to a level of agreement in a team as long as you understand that my being quiet does not mean that I am not engaging. So this is where working agreements really, really are really important, because in spite of the personality traits, you can always reach a compromise and come to an agreement as to preferred ways of communication, how I would like to pass my messages across. And this is where the Scrum Master has to come into ownership there, because they are the ones that protect the team from external impediments, but also they are also to keep the team dynamics going as much as possible. I mean, obviously you have some personality types that they're almost impossible to work with, but doing that personality test helps to understand that person's thinking. And that's just one part of it. I mean, there's a whole raft of work behind it and research in terms of personality type and how to engage with people at a personal level and also at a group team level as well.
So you've given me a couple of tips there, Pamela, around vital things to include within working agreements and, you know, when, especially when teams are forming, around how team members like to learn, how they like to communicate, how they like to receive feedback. And those things are really important, because those things are what moves progress along during a particular sprint. It moves our own growth along during that journey with that particular team. And it also gives us confidence to voice those characteristics about us, doesn't it?
It does, definitely, because firstly, you need the freedom to be able to solve problems for yourselves in a team or in an organization, to be very honest, because organizations and teams, we strive to be autonomous, but yet we put roadblocks in front of ourselves, you know, a lot of silo working and all that. So I think breaking down those silos is really, really important within the team, from a team context, but also from an organizational context, because silo working breeds a lot of invisibility. So there's no transparency. You don't know what's happening. And communication cross silo is really, really poor, especially if you don't have handover points. So it's really, really important that, you know, autonomous teams are empowered. And how do you do that? How do you create an autonomous team if there is no psychological safety within that environment? Because you need to nurture trust. And a lot of the work we do is, apart from the fact that, you know, it is skilled work, you know, we've got these great and wonderful professionals, we need to build trust within our teams. But how do you build trust if you don't feel safe within that team to be able to build that level of trust that you trust, you know, that you would be safe, you know, within your environment? Failure is inevitable within projects. It's not all sprints that would be successful. I can say that within your experience and my experience, it's not every single sprint that you meet your sprint goal and you have all the stories you took into your sprint, 100%, everything complete, continually, every time, every day. That team, please give me that team, you know? So I don't know anyone that has happened to, especially when you're starting off either as a Scrum Master or even as an agile coach, or even forming new teams. You're moving from one way of working to another way of working. Of course, there's going to be a lot of, you know, forming, norming, storming, you know, all that stage that you need to go through to be able to establish yourself as a team. And at that point is when you actually introduce psychological safety at the inception of a team. That is when psychological safety should be introduced within the team, so that first and foremost, the team can trust each other, can trust the organization. That's where it drives the behaviors of delivery, when there's no predictability, you know, where the stakeholders are expecting something and the team is just not delivering. But somebody has to look at why the team is not delivering. Sometimes the team wants to deliver, but there are just so many factors there that are invisible to the stakeholder eyes, but are anti-pattern within the team. That is where you as a Scrum Master, as an Agile coach or whoever, has to go in there with the lens of a detached person, no emotions attached, and begin to look at what improvements can be made. And sometimes it just takes little improvements at a time for you to begin to see the changes and begin to drive the right behaviors within the organization and within your team especially. Psychological safety, it has a knock-on effect, because the moment one team begins that journey, it automatically just flames up a lot of conversation within the next team and within the organization at large, because your team members are emboldened to begin to challenge. And that's because they feel empowered. And if you don't feel empowered, you cannot challenge. If you don't challenge, you cannot learn. If you cannot learn, then you cannot contribute. And if you cannot contribute, then you don't feel safe. Without psychological safety, inefficiency is really, really high.
What would you like the key takeaways to be, Pamela, for our listeners from this episode?
The one thing, psychological safety is multidirectional, and it's everyone's responsibility to create psychological safety, both for themselves and within their teams. It's not just one person's responsibility. The greater remit lies within leadership of the organization, yes, but we also have to take care of our mental space, because it's the last thing you want to happen is to not come to work with 100% of you when you have all these other mental things that are going on within you. And number two, psychological safety can be expressed by anyone. You know, they're different ones. So if you're not learning, you're not contributing, you don't feel included, and you are not able to challenge, then you need to begin to ask questions, not only of yourself, but also of your wider team. Why don't I feel included? Why is it not safe for me to learn within this team or organization? Why can I not contribute? And why am I not able to challenge the status quo? Ask yourself those four questions in the next 6 months. See what answers you come up with and what changes you can make within your team and for leadership within your organization when it comes to psychological safety.
Thank you so much, Pamela. If people want to get in touch with you, work with you, how do they contact you?
Best thing is to contact me on LinkedIn, and I am happy to drop my LinkedIn details with you so that when the podcast goes out, you know, they'll have my LinkedIn details. But that's the easiest way to contact me, because I am check LinkedIn quite a lot.
Thank you very much to all of you that have listened and watched our episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please make sure that you follow us on all of our socials so that you don't miss out on great episodes like this. Bye for now.
Bye.